following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Yeah. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Oh, once she grabs, she won't let go. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole. Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that soft stuff.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
None of that heavy metal stuff.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Just a little bit of jazz.
Rock, rock, rockin' Nicole.
Think.
Just
I
like
love
that.
It. That was great. Thank you.
All right. Well, welcome to a Friday. As you might be able to tell from the show card today, I make a little graphic for each day's show. Today's is just called FUBAR Friday. There almost was not a show today. And, well, I'm here and we'll get started. But I guess how we progress depends on you, what you want to do. Let me start at the beginning and tell you what went wrong. I recorded an interview yesterday morning that was really good. Here, let me show you. Oh, so it was with this author, this historian, a guy named Ian Kershaw, who is British. In fact, it was a phone call. He was over there in, Tomer, I'm here. No, it says replay of a show from 2 years ago, but I'm here. So it was supposed to, so I recorded this interview with Ian Kershaw, who is a world renowned historian and author. And, he's written like the definitive biographies of Hitler and things like that. And he's got this new book out. It's called Personality and Power, Builders and Destroyers of Modern Europe. And he spotlights 12 different European leaders from, I shouldn't build this up too much because you're not going to hear it, from Lenin, Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin, Churchill, De Gaulle, Adenauer, Franco, Tito, Thatcher, Gorbachev, and Helmut Kohl. And so we taped the interview yesterday. I was going to air it today. And it was really good. It was really good. And so I had stuff I had to do this morning. I come in here to get ready to, you know, get that interview ready to air today. And, well, I pull up the video. I'm not going to play for you the video, but I'll play for you a few seconds of the audio so you'll hear why we're not hearing this interview. Here's what it sounded like.
The media controls the power. And we.
Yeah, so the whole thing sounds like that. To say I'm heartbroken because it's a really good interview. So anyway, I figured I'd come on here. I'd explain what happened. I would tell you some of the news that's going on because there is some news. And then what I did was I pulled out a show from 2 years ago today. And what's interesting about it is some of the people that I reached out to come in today who couldn't make it because I tried to find a replacement guest. One of them was the guy who was on my show 2 years ago today, Mike Lux, who is a Democratic Party operative, strategist, whatever you want to call him. You know, he works inside and outside. He does, he's a progressive, but he's a progressive who works with people inside the DNC. So he's a great person to talk to get perspective on what's going on. And I asked him to come in today. He couldn't. And then I pulled up the show from 2 years ago today. And who is my guest? Mike Lux. So I'm not sure we'll get to it. But if we don't get to it, I will still post a link to it on today's blog at NicoleSandler.com/11-18-22. So you can go back and listen because it's really good. So anyway, that was good. The interview that you'll never hear was really good. So, but there is so much going on that I thought, you know what? I can't just not come on the air today. You know, I don't operate that way. So what I want to start with is, this announcement made just maybe an hour ago by Merrick Garland. Now, Merrick Garland, we've got a love-hate relationship with Merrick Garland. We want him to do the right thing here, although, you know, he hasn't yet. And today he announced that he's going to put a special counsel in place. I'm going to play for you the whole announcement. I'll probably chime in between. But, you know, and then afterwards, we're going to talk about the different reactions to it. But let's first hear what Attorney General Merrick Garland had to say. Take it away, Merrick.
Good afternoon.
I'm
here today to announce the appointment of a special counsel in connection with two ongoing criminal investigations that have received significant public attention. The first, as described in court filings in the District of Columbia, is the investigation into whether any person or entity unlawfully interfered with the transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election or the certification of the Electoral College vote held on or about January 6, 2021.
Okay.
The second is the ongoing investigation involving classified documents and other presidential records, as well as the possible obstruction of that investigation, referenced and described in court filings in a pending matter in the Southern District of Florida.
Okay.
I'm joined today by Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia Matthew Graves, and Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division Kenneth Pallette.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay,
Assistant Attorney General for National Security Matthew Olson could not be here. He is currently in Germany, representing the department at the G7 Home Affairs and Security Ministerial.
I guess maybe we do. I don't know.
U.S. Attorney Graves has been ably leading the investigations into the events leading up to and on January 6. He and dozens of assistant U.S. attorneys and other prosecutors have taken on the monumental task of conducting over 900 prosecutions in defense of our democratic institutions. Criminal Division prosecutors under the able leadership of Assistant Attorney General Pallette have played a significant role in those prosecutions. Assistant Attorney General Olson has been ably leading the team responsible for investigating the matter involving classified documents and other presidential records, as well as the possible obstruction of that investigation. All of the career prosecutors assigned to these matters are conducting their work in the best traditions of the Department of Justice. I also want to recognize the efforts of the many FBI agents and other law enforcement personnel who are assigned to these matters. They are working courageously and steadfastly and are serving our nation honorably.
Yeah.
I am grateful to them. We all are. The Department of Justice has long recognized that in certain extraordinary cases, it is in the public interest to appoint a special prosecutor to independently manage an investigation and prosecution.
Okay.
Based on recent developments, including the former president's announcement that he is a candidate for president in the next election, and the sitting president's stated intention to be a candidate as well, I have concluded that it is in the public interest to appoint a special counsel.
Okay.
Such an appointment underscores the department's commitment to both independence and accountability in particularly sensitive matters. It also allows prosecutors and agents to continue their work expeditiously and to make decisions indisputably guided only by the facts and the law. The special counsel will conduct parts of the first investigation I just mentioned. The investigation into whether any person or entity unlawfully interfered with the transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election or with the certification of the Electoral College vote held on or about January 6.
Okay.
This does not include prosecutions that are currently pending in the District of Columbia or future investigations and prosecutions of individuals for offenses committed while they were physically present on the Capitol grounds on January 6. Those investigations and prosecutions will remain under the authority of the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. The special counsel will also conduct the investigation involving classified documents and other presidential records, as well as the possible obstruction of that investigation.
Yeah.
Today, I signed an order appointing Jack Smith, to serve as special counsel.
Jack Smith is
the
good.
The order authorizes him to continue the ongoing investigation into both of the matters that I have just described and to prosecute any federal crimes that may arise from those investigations. Mr. Smith is a veteran career prosecutor. He began his prosecutorial career in 1994 as an assistant district attorney with the New York County DA's office. In 1999, he became an assistant U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York, where over the course of 9 years, he prosecuted matters ranging from gang murders of police officers to civil rights violations. From 2008 to 2010, he served with the International Criminal Court, where he supervised war crimes investigations. In 2010, Mr. Smith returned to the Justice Department to serve as chief of the Public Integrity Section, where he led a team of more than 30 prosecutors who handled public corruption and election crimes cases across the United States. In 2015, he agreed to serve as the first assistant U.S. attorney for the Middle District of Tennessee, later becoming the acting United States attorney. Most recently, Mr. Smith served as a chief prosecutor for the special court in The Hague, charged with investigating and adjudicating war crimes in Kosovo. Mr. Smith will begin his work as special counsel immediately.
Okay.
And will be returning to the United States from The Hague.
So Mr. Smith goes to Washington,
throughout his career,
I presume.
Jack Smith has built a reputation as an impartial and determined prosecutor who leads teams with energy and focus to follow the facts wherever they lead. As special counsel, he will exercise independent prosecutorial judgment to decide whether charges should be brought. Although the special counsel will not be subject to the day-to-day supervision of any official of the department, he must comply with the regulations, procedures, and policies of the department. I will ensure that the special counsel receives the resources to conduct this work quickly and completely.
Completely.
Given the work to date and Mr. Smith's prosecutorial experience, I am confident that this appointment will not slow the completion of these investigations. The men and women who are pursuing these investigations are conducting themselves in accordance with the highest standards of professionalism.
Yeah.
I could not be prouder of them.
Well, that's nice.
I strongly believe that the
normal
processes
of this department
can handle all
investigations with integrity.
Handle all investigations with integrity. And I also believe that appointing a special counsel at this time is the right thing to do. The extraordinary circumstances presented here demand it. Mr. Smith is the right choice to complete these matters in an even-handed and urgent manner.
Urgent.
Thank you all.
Did he say urgent? So,
good afternoon.
We already heard you. Okay, so he said urgent. That's the one thing I'm not hearing in Merrick Garland's delivery. Urgency! My God, could he be any more monotone and horrible of a speaker? So... what do we think about this? So as my day going the way it's been, I sent Lisa Graves an email saying, hey, so what do you think of, what about this move? And she wrote back, she's like, I'm so sorry, I'm traveling today. I don't even know what's going on. So maybe she'll check in with us next week. But today she couldn't help. So I'm telling you, it's been one of those FUBAR kind of days. So I did a little, cruising around the interwebs and found out a few things. So Raw Story did a kind of a wrap, a roundup of legal experts. For instance, former Watergate prosecutor Jill Wine Banks tweeted about the special counsel, quote, it's a waste of time and money, insults the prosecutors at DOJ and gains nothing. No Trump supporter will see anything as independent or fair to Trump. Okay, so that's one in that column. National Security Attorney Bradley Moss also criticized the move, warning it will, quote, now definitely delay any decisions until January at the earliest. And he tweeted, ironically, by announcing a special counsel this late in the game, Garland just made it more likely that any potential prosecution of Trump will bleed into the 2024 general election season. Slate legal analyst Jeremy Stahl said that Garland's announcement gave Trump exactly what he'd hoped for by announcing so early. It's cowardly and it could backfire spectacularly. But Not all of the legal experts are of that mind. Some said, no, this was the right call. Renato Mariotti, who you've seen on the TV, former federal prosecutor, he wrote, a special counsel offers some measure of independence and transparency, which is a good thing. The investigation is far along, and the same FBI agents can work for the special counsel. And he said the appointment will slow things down by weeks, not months, if at all. Okay. Berkeley law professor Orrin Kerr said this will be Trump's second stumbling his way into a special counsel appointment, which is something. I don't even know what that means. But you know who I turn to for this, right? You know who my go-to person is. And tell me oh, here it is. So, of course, I want to see what Marcy Wheeler thinks. And so she has a whole Twitter thread, but she also has the piece up at emptywheel.net. So let me share that with you. She wrote, to my mind, the best part of appointing war crimes and public corruption prosecutor Jack Smith as special counsel to oversee the twin investigations into Donald Trump is that it will now be a cinch to subpoena Ginni Thomas. I always trust Marcy Wheeler to come up with that twist that no one else is thinking about, right? She writes, otherwise, I have mixed feelings about the decision. I think the letter of DOJ guidelines requires it, but I don't think it will change how much of a clusterfuck Trump makes of it. It does have certain other advantages other than making it easier to subpoena Ginni. It might even make it easy to subpoena Mike Pence. Ooh. First, this will make it very easy to refuse Jim Jordan's demands for information about the investigation. And that alone is worth the price of admission. That I said that. She didn't. Continuing, she writes, it will ensure the continuity of any prosecution after 2025, no matter who is elected. Neither hypothetical Trump prosecution, the stolen documents or the coup attempt, would be done by then, even if it were indicted on December 15th, the earliest possible date for either. So that's interesting. And she continued, she said, I don't think this will create much of a delay. The stolen documents case, God, I'm losing my, hold on. Let me get some water. This is not supposed to be happening. And by the way, we have a new listener in the chat room, Bob White, who conveniently asked, what's the website to donate to Nicole? Thank you, Bob White. It's NicoleSandler.com. And there are a number of like donate buttons throughout the website. So you'll see them there. Thank you. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you joining us. All right, back to Marcy Wheeler. She says, I don't think this will create much of a delay. The stolen documents case, which is the first that could be prosecuted, assuming the 11th Circuit Court overturns Judge Aileen Cannon's special master order, is fairly self-contained, so it would only take a day to be briefed into. The coup attempt is far, far more complex, but I think there was no way Trump himself would be indicted before February or March anyway, probably longer. Again, I'm reading from Marcy Wheeler at emptywheel.net. Boy, it's a good thing it's Friday. Nothing is working here anymore. My equipment, my brain, my tongue, my mouth. All right, we'll get there. You know, 40 minutes left. Marcy Wheeler continues. The jurisdictional boundary is of interest. Anyone who crimed at the Capitol will be prosecuted by D.C. U.S. Attorney Matthew Graves. Anyone who is not physically present at the Capitol would fall under Smith's investigation. It's unclear where Alex Jones would fit in that scheme, she writes. Roger Stone, though, would be moved under Smith. And then she says, my favorite part of the order appointing Smith is this part. and it's your Section B under whatever. The special counsel is authorized to conduct the ongoing investigation into whether any person or entity violated the law in connection with efforts to interfere with the lawful transfer of power following the 2020 presidential election or the certification of the Electoral College vote held on or about January 6, 2021. And this is what she has underlined. As well as any matters that arose or might arise directly from this investigation or that are within the scope of 28 CFR section 600.4A. I think that's how you say all those numbers. And then she explains, she says, the language authorizing a special counsel to investigate anything that, quote, might directly arise from this investigation is standard special counsel language. It generally covers efforts to obstruct the investigation. Only, usually, it only appears in the subjunctive, right? Now she's using big words, subjunctive, covering matters that might arise in the future. This authorizes Smith to investigate things that already have, which would only be necessary if such matters had already arisen. The order also authorizes Smith to spin off prosecutions. D. Special counsel is authorized to prosecute federal crimes arising from the investigation of these matters. The special counsel is also authorized to refer to the appropriate U.S. attorney discrete prosecutions that may arise from the special counsel's investigations. And she wraps it up by saying, again, that's not boilerplate. It may suggest that Garland has already seen evidence of criminality that could and should be spun off. Mostly, I think this is an decision. It doesn't change Garland's role in the process. I don't think it delays things. I think it carries certain advantages, two of those named Ginny and Jim. But otherwise, Marcy Wheeler concludes, the investigation continues with, as Garland said, urgency. Because that's how Merrick Garland says, it's urgent, it's urgent. It reminds me of Harry Reid. Remember Harry Reid? Give him hell, Harry. Reginald says, hey, Nicole, how exactly do you feel about Speaker Nancy Pelosi stepping down as Speaker of the House today? Good question. I'll tell you, I was very heartened to hear her say these words right here, these very words.
For me, the hour's come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus that I so deeply respect.
A new generation to lead the Democratic caucus. Yes, that's what I've been saying. I'm sorry. Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn, they are all 82, 83, 84 years old. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I am not an ageist. I have no problem with the geriatric sect as long as they don't act their age. For instance, I think Joe Biden is too old. I think Donald Trump is too old. I think Nancy Pelosi, Jim Clyburn, and Steny Hoyer are all too old. I thought Patrick Leahy was too old, and thankfully he retired. Chuck Grassley is too old, and he just won another six-year term in the Senate. And Dianne Feinstein is sitting there at 89 years old, where her brain doesn't work anymore, and people have to tell her what she thinks. Bernie Sanders, chronologically, is just as old. But he's got all his faculties about him. He can speak. He can speak extemporaneously and know what he's talking about. He doesn't present as 80-something years old. I don't think Bernie Sanders is too old because he's active. His brain is active. His mind still works. Some of these other people, they don't identify with the younger people. Have you noticed how the young people identify with Bernie? That's because he listens to them. The others who I just named do not. They live in the past. The future, look, we're looking at catastrophic climate changes. You know, look what's happening in the Buffalo area right now. They're going to have, you know, they're going to have so much snow this winter, this weekend. They canceled a football game there last night, and they play in, you know, pretty blazing snow blizzard kind of things. And yes, Biden's mind still works, but not, you know what? Biden always had trouble speaking. And I'm not referring to the stutter here, though it does affect his delivery. And I give him all the credit in the world for overcoming the stutter and speaking, you know, publicly, regularly, and becoming president of the United States. Joe Biden just has a gaffe problem. He always has. You can, you know, go back 20 years, if there was a Google then, you could Google Joe Biden gaffe machine and they would come up. He does it all the time. And let me tell you something else. This is the other thing that really pissed me off. And I don't understand it at all. And by the way, you know, should you care to weigh in on any of this? We don't have a guest today. 954-889-6410 is the number. Or you could, if you're on Skype, you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. Tripp disagrees. Clyburn is beloved, competent, and capable. He's stepping down, but he is no less sharper than Bernie. He is less sharp than Bernie. He's not stepping down, though. He still wants to be in leadership. He's going to take the fourth position, the assistant whip or something, and because he's still Steny Hoyer is following Nancy's lead, and he's going to step down from leadership. But Clyburn will not. He wants to be in leadership. Meanwhile, Joe Neguse, who is a really good, young, terrific congressman from, I want to say, Denver, from Colorado, he wanted to get in leadership, and he's being sidelined because Jim Clyburn wants to keep his foot in the leadership department. You know what? Let the next generation take over. This is their future. I don't care if you like Jim Clyburn or hate him. Enough. He's had his chance. And sorry, they didn't do a great job of it. Let the next generation take over. And I want to see Joe Neguse in there to neutralize Pete Aguilar and Hakeem Jeffries. From what I've read, Catherine Clark seems okay, but we could use another progressive or two in leadership. All right. Who's on the phone here? Is this Robert?
You know, Robert over here in Florida.
Hey, Naples. Robert in Naples. What's on your mind?
All right. I got to disagree with you. You asked for people to call.
Sure. You can disagree with me. That's fine.
Who brought the youth to the table? Who was the last election? It was Joe. You know, the kids are connected with Joe. Uncle Joe.
The kids are not connected with Joe Biden. You know who brought the kids to the table?
Who showed up to the election?
They did. The kids did. But it wasn't Joe Biden who brought them. It was the extreme court who took away their right to do with their bodies what they want to do.
I don't know. I have to beg to differ. I think he's going to become a cult classic as time goes by.
I hope you're right. I tend to disagree, but I hope you're right. Tell you the other thing he did that so pissed me off, and it really pisses me off, and I'm not hearing a whole lot about it on the news. Joe Biden gave Mohammed bin Salman immunity for the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. What the fuck?
One of two things about that. I heard that. You know, the way I look, when I heard Joe's always said he can't prosecute anybody. That's the department.
That's not his job. But he said, MBS, basically in his role as, you know, the crown prince or whatever stupid fucking, you know, lucky sperm club job he got.
I hope someone bumps out his ass.
Right. Well, right. But so because he's now sort of the equivalent of a prime minister, well, then he should have diplomatic immunity. You know what that is? You know, Robert, you know what that is? It's Oops, wrong button. It's bullshit is what it is. Hold on, I got to get my good bullshit button out.
Bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's
all right,
bullshit.
Hold on a minute. The headline is huge. It shakes the world. Everyone's thinking, what's Joe doing here? Is this a gaffe? But here's what I think it is, Nicole.
Yeah?
I think there's a split between Russia and Saudi Arabia. And this is just playing into Putin's head. Because, well, you know, Putin's not getting any immunity. You know, he Saudi Arabia is, you know, he's trying to, I think it's some kind of inside poker, inside politics that we don't. It's not
nah. Come on. You're buying the 11 level chess thing?
Well,
come on.
What do you think Putin's thinking right now when he sees that, hears that? He's thinking, wait a minute, that guy over there who's
I think he's thinking that Uncle Joe's fist bump was ill conceived and that he's sucking up to MBS because he wants to bring the gas prices down.
No, I don't think it's that. I think he's trying to divide Putin and him. I think that's what it is. We got our own. We have enough gas here.
Yep.
You know, and Putin, what Biden could do and should do is say, listen, I don't know who agreed to this last agreement, but we have our own oil, but we got to put our own oil on the public market to fill our reserves. No, bullshit. You know what? Sue me. You know, let the American people hear what you're trying to do. You're trying to stop me from filling up our oil reserves with our own oil. Fuck use.
Right.
You know?
I hear you.
Just do it. You know?
I hear you.
No. We're changing that law. I don't give a shit. Executive order. This is gonna get.
Well,
and then they could just shut up all those.
It's not an executive order. This was not an executive order. It was not an executive order. It was here.
No, I'm talking about oil. I'm talking about filling up our own oil.
Gotcha.
With our oil reserves.
Well,
no. Him talking about giving. You know what? His day will come. I think one day when oil is really not as, you know. When they're holding on to the typewriters of the world, because basically oil won't become that important anymore. Saudi Arabia's fucked. I mean, what else do they got to give the world, you know? I really think Joe Biden one day will just say, okay, now 9/11. You know, now you got to pay for that.
Yep.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't care if our country went to war with Saudi Arabia.
Oh, God.
I really wouldn't.
Okay.
All right.
Robert, on that note, I'm going to let you go today. War, sorry.
Goodbye.
We are not going to war with Saudi Arabia or anybody else. See, that's a bridge too far for me. Now, my dear friend Tripp, who I adore, is in the chat room. And Tripp, you said, I need to jump up here and read this comment. Tripp said, what? I also love, and I mean love, he said, hold on one second, Spocko. Tripp says, I also love, and I mean love, Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem Jeffries was in bed with AIPAC and Democratic Majority for Israel, another AIPAC-type pack that targeted progressives, targeted progressives. And I get it. I know, Tripp, you're more of a centrist, as is Hakeem Jeffries. But if we don't have the Bernie Sanders coalition, then we got nothing, nothing. You wouldn't have that youth vote. The only reason Joe Biden attempted to help out with the student loan debt crisis is because he was pushed by the progressives. The only reason the drug prices came down a little bit for seniors on Medicare is because of the progressives. The only reason all that good stuff that got done is because the Bernie Sanders coalition pushed him. And if they go all in, and Hakeem Jeffries has said this, he doesn't want to hear from the squad. He doesn't want to know from them. Sorry, that's not how you build a united Democratic Party. The show that I was going to play if I didn't wind up doing a show today, that was the theme. It was from 2 years ago today when Biden had just won. It was all about can the Democrats unify? Can there be unity? We know the Republicans can't, but it also seems that we can't because, sorry, Hakeem Jeffries is not one to extend an olive branch. I want to see him bring AOC in and give her the plummest of assignments. But that won't happen. It won't happen. I love you, Tripp, but a Hakeem Jeffries, bad choice. That the worst choice, you know, that they could have made. Adam Schiff would have been good. I understand, you know, given the identity politics nature of the way we do things, I understand that a white guy in 2022 is not going to be named leader of the Democrats. But, man, Hakeem Jeffries, AIPAC and DMFI going after progressives, they sent millions of dollars into defeating Summer Lee, who thankfully won. David, yes, you want to say something before I go to the phone here?
Yes. In regard to the concept of our oil.
Yeah.
Okay. Our oil is sold as part of a global market.
Uh-huh. That's true.
Exxon and the rest of the American, I'm using air quotes here, American oil companies don't give a shit about this country. They will sell their oil for the highest price that they can get to whoever they can sell it to for that price. So this concept of we've got enough oil in our country is nonsense.
Yeah, right.
It's an oil market that is global, and the price of that market is set globally, and the availability of that market is set globally as well. In terms of Nancy Pelosi, the people who are going to miss her the most is Wall Street.
Yeah.
Because now, how are Congress people going to be able to conduct their inside trading?
Well, that's the thing. You know, she's been holding that up because she likes being rich. But so do other people in Congress.
Right. But the leader is the leader. The leader for is a the reason. Leader.
And look, Hakeem Jeffries is not going to differ with Nancy Pelosi on this one.
Absolutely not at all. Not at all. Not one bit.
Not one bit. Okay. Oh, you're done? That's it? Okay. All right. Thank you, David. So anyway, what about Maxine Waters? Maxine Waters is not in leadership or anything like that. All right. I see we got my old pal Spocko on the line. Hey, Spocko.
Hi. And today is time for the Twitter Roundup.
Oh. So last night at apparently 5 o'clock, Twitter... You know, Elon Musk had issued this ultimatum by way of a memo saying either you're going to get with the program, which means you're going to work your asses off. It's going to be, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing. No remote working. You're going to come in the office. You're going to be there 40 hours a week and then weekends and nights. And if you don't want to do it, you can leave and take 3 months severance. And just about everybody said, okay, we'll take the 3 months severance, to the point where Twitter is now the headquarters, the building is shuttered. So even the people who still work there can't get in. It's locked down because Elmo's afraid someone's going to sabotage it.
I was thinking having a parody song would be something like by the Beach Boys. And we had fun, fun, fun till Elon Musk took our T-Bird away.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So the latest bits about that for the news is that 1,200 people resigned after his latest, you know, you got to be hardcore, where he said you got to come in, and they resigned, and then they had like, oh great, those are actually people who could make things work, and so he softened it and he said, well, if your manager says that you're doing excellent work remotely, then you can come in. And then when that came out, then he had to go back and say, be hardcore again, which was like, and if the manager's lying, they'll be fired. So I the other latest news is he announced that he has reinstated Kathy Griffin,
yes.
Babylon Bee, and yeah. Jordan Peterson.
Yes.
And but he hasn't decided on Trump yet.
But I, you know, look, I admit that my brain works in weird ways sometimes. I don't, this Elmo guy, I do not get at all.
Well, I think I've said before, I have experience working with him specifically and Silicon Valley and mindset. And I'm seeing this, and there's the big kind of point that I see from this is he's going through the exact same, you know, view of the importance of what is, you know, moderation and speech on a platform like this. Somebody called it a speed run. Like, he's going through all the mistakes and the decisions that have been made over years. And there was a, you know, a good piece in the New York Times by the former head of trust and safety at Twitter,
right?
Who just resigned yesterday as well.
That's right.
And they had created a platform that dealt with a lot of the issues. And one of the big issues was that I care about was harassment and, you know, violent speech and things like that. And then when he looked at how Musk looked at the world, which is basically, hey, I'm the decider, I'm the arbitrator, he said, if you're going to be the one to make decide, then we don't need policies, okay? It's all up to you. And this is going to come down to how he views this. And the other thing you noted, like with his letting people go, he's got the typical Silicon Valley engineer mindset where he's asking people, print out your code and show me how the code works. Well, you know, this is really right now, it's about policy and people. I mean, what is your policy about threatening violence? Inciting violence. I mean, that was what got Trump kicked off. Is that still in line?
Yeah.
And he's also, the other thing is, this is this kind of juvenile, kind of snarky troll attitude that we had seen it like from the Twitter people. And I also say this is this kind of ego. When you get this huge, as people do, what will influence you? It's kind of like, hey, I'm the richest man in the world. What can you tell me? You know, he has that attitude. And I've worked with these people. Like I said, I've you know, media trained the Sergey Brin, Larry Page, Sheryl Sandberg. Right. I work with these people on the way up where they actually, at that point, they do listen to people. And here is Musk ignoring all of the people who are saying, you're going to lose all of this revenue if you don't make it safe. And so he's come along and he said, all right, well, I don't need these people. It's all about the code. And so his latest thing was that he had people do a screenshot of, you know, the code that you would do. And he said, you know, fly into San Francisco. And the line was, the reason that nobody could get in the building was because the guy who had the badges for authorization laid off.
Right. Although I heard that was a spoof account. I heard that wasn't a real tweeter. But so the thing is, all the lines of reality are blurred. You don't know what's real and what isn't.
Right. And that's one of, and this is the disinformation part of the, you know, disinformation problem. And I've said before, and I was on Matt Bender's show talking about the group that I really like right now is the Center for Countering Digital Hate. And he said, this is in his definition of speech doesn't include abuse and hatred. And this is something that has to be due. And disinformation is a big part of it. Well, if he's the only one who decides what disinformation is, it's going to be a big problem. And the reason that he lost all of the advertisers had to do with that, you know, is it really Eli Lilly?
Right.
And,
right.
You know, right. Eli Lilly, their stock dropped 4.37% and cost them billions in revenue because he didn't have a policy to deal with disinformation and impersonation.
Right. And he still doesn't.
He's planning, the latest thing is he's planning on bringing back Twitter Blue in November 29th. And the reason that he does this in terms of, and this is the other thing I'm saying about the Silicon Valley mindset that I see, where they, you know, they try this and they don't listen to people and they try it. And then they get, you know, they see the huge disaster And then they pull back and say, oh, it'll be an iteration. It's like a product iteration. What he doesn't see is that there are other forces that are driving him in certain ways, I mean, that drive the need for revenue. And he's, you know, ignoring them because he thinks, well, I can get money from Twitter Blue. The other big things that I really liked, and I think I mentioned it last time, was that Senator Ed Markey pointed out to him that he is under an FTC consent decree because of privacy violations. And the privacy violations where they actually would do something, they did something about that to Facebook, cost them $5 billion. But he also is not paying attention to the global things about Twitter. I mean, we look at Twitter just from like this U.S. perspective.
Right.
But they've had big problems in other countries where they actually have to follow the laws, like because of German laws. And the one that is kind of new to me was kind of how things happen in other countries like India, where it is a way that the other countries, they try and use Twitter in a way, and they would threaten Twitter employees if they don't do certain things. So he has ignored a lot of tools and procedures that have been developed over the years that help make it worthwhile. And he goes back to this. I mean, do you see the tweet where he said, you know, vote Republican because we need kind of like this split house? This is juvenile thinking that is not developed based on what has been happening over the last 10 years. It's like, no, the Republicans are intimidators and they're threatening. Now, think about what would happen if and when Trump comes back to Twitter.
Oh, God. No, I don't want to.
What's going to stop him? What's going
right.
to stop
nothing.
Him?
Nothing. Well, yeah, you know, nothing. Here's the thing. When Marcy Wheeler was on the show the other day, what she said is, I'd take Twitter off my phone because the people who safeguarded, you know, all the safety things aren't
privacy,
there
right.
anymore. There's nobody there anymore.
Yes. And they're massively hackable right now. Cause I follow this. And by the way, Laffy and I are on Mastodon. I'm there as Spocko at Mastodon Mastodon.online.
I'm at Nicole Sandler at MSTDON or MSTDN.social. It's also confusing. I'm on there, but I don't get it. Maybe this is the old person in me. I'm just, you know, and I'm pretty tech savvy.
You are. You're very tech savvy.
But I just don't. I get lost with those, with Mastodon especially, because there's all these different servers and I don't know how they connect, and I hope Twitter survives because I'm used to it.
And Kara Swisher did a piece and she said, you know, they'll still be around. They still have power because a lot of people are there, and they'll look for other platforms. But it is the reason that I think this is important is it points out how we are in a position where one incredibly wealthy person has the ability to take over something and impose his idea or the rules and pretending like the rest of the rules don't matter. And the way that the market is showing him that, oh, these do matter, is like the advertisers leave and there goes 90% of his revenue. And what I pointed out the other day is, there are some problems, other problems in social media that haven't been fixed, but Facebook figured out a way to be profitable and still allow harm. And
yeah.
They should be and something.
They should be broken up. But here's the thing. You know, Facebook, I resisted and resisted for so long and understood that, you know, it sucks and Zuckerberg sucks. But I'll tell you something. Facebook, as does Twitter, they both perform a really useful function.
Yes.
For me, Facebook is where I reconnected with my old friends from New York. My family moved to Florida from New York on the last day of sixth grade. I reconnected with elementary school friends. How mm-hmm. weird is that? Then, now, I reconnected with high school friends who are, you know, I went to high school in this area in South Florida, but I moved away for so many years. I didn't keep in touch. I kept in touch with two people. So I've kept in touch with them. And my entire, you know, my work, private life overlap in Los Angeles, everybody, because we're old, we're on Facebook. Facebook is you know, for old people, and that's fine. I understand all the kids go to Instagram. I'm not really cool on the Instagram thing. I kind of use it, but I don't
it's
really
TikTok.
Do it.
TikTok. That's where all the kids are now. TikTok.
I don't go to TikTok. I'm not a TikToker. I'm
You'd
old.
Be a great TikToker. You'd dance and sing. It'd be great.
Yeah. No. It wouldn't be, but you know, just saying, you know, so I've embraced Facebook for what it is, that it's a way to reconnect or stay in touch with people that I've known forever, you know, industry people that I've lost touch with. So it serves its purpose. Twitter has been great for me for news, for getting, mm-hmm. you know, guests on the show, for breaking news, because if I waited for the breaking news emails to hit my inbox, they'd already been on Twitter for 20, 30 minutes.
Right, right.
And so I
that's
going to
be the thing if you want to like recreate in Mastodon or other places is going to be the feed with some of the same journalists that you normally follow. I think that's what will be, you know, coming up and up soon.
Yep. Well, and there's a lot. And one of the servers on Mastodon is like a Journo host or something like that. And a lot of journalists are on that one, but they all interchange. So, you know, I'm on the mstdn.social one, but it's okay because they all talk to each other, which I just don't understand.
It's like somebody was describing it as like, you know, neighborhoods in which they are all part of in a city.
Oh, that was interesting. Kind of yeah. You know, there are, and people, they're very welcoming over there. And there are a number of people who will come into your stream or whatever it is and say, you know, here, I've written a primer, a good introduction to Mass, but it's too much work. I just want to go on and post and read. I don't want to read a whole instruction manual to do a social media network.
Yeah, I always wonder about some of these things that the long tail, as they say, the way that people have gone into this. Every time that there's a new social media platform, you know, people would move from. We were talking about Dig, that used to be the big thing,
yeah.
Or how that went away. You got to go new things. Would there be things that you liked about the other one and things you didn't like about the about it that? You know, can we take the good things and not forget the reasons that there were problems with Twitter? And this is a thing about, again, Mastodon and these people, they have moderation policies, they have terms and service, but it's going to be difficult for them to start scaling and developing it. And it's an opportunity for, you know, creeps to, you know, come in and start hacking and doing these people. So, that's the reason why, you know, if Twitter gets better, and I was asking people the other day, do you want Twitter to be, you know, fixed?
Yeah.
And
I want Elon to leave.
To leave because he is the problem. And my friend Angelo Carasone at Media Matters, he was part of the group. It was a bunch of them, Color of Change,
right?
Free Press,
yeah.
Media Matters.
And Angelo was at Stop Beck when I first met him. He was a college student, a law school student, tweeting, and he really put it over the top. He got Glenn Beck taken off of Fox.
Yeah, and I helped. He followed kind of the things that I did with White Ring Radio.
Yep.
And one of the things that he knew about Twitter was it was a public facing thing that other people could see it. Whereas when I use emails and call people, they couldn't see it. And that's the benefit of Twitter is that not only the company like Beck can see it, but other people can see it and say, hey, there's a problem here.
Yep.
And I think that the steps that they took where they told all the advertisers, hey, it's not just Twitter. If they kept their good policies and enforcement, it's Elon Musk. And he tweeted out something where Merrill Lynch did a, you know, came back on the platform, and I don't know if they had left or not. And he said, you know, here's Elon Musk doing something really stupid. You're supposed to be a financial services company, and you just had Elon Musk cause the stock price of Elon Lilly to drop by billions. Is that very fiscally, you know, conservative that you're advertising on a space that could cause your portfolios to drop?
Yep.
It's kind of reminding these people who left, it's like there was a reason that they had these policies. Musk has his own definitions, which are juvenile and wrong, that need to be brought back. That's what needs to happen. And
okay, Spock,
you know, everybody says, well, what do you think he's going to do? And it's going to be if he cares about trying to get the money back, or he'll try and get out from CEO or whatever. Those are the various different tricks you do. What do we want? I would like some of the same good things about Twitter to
come
stay.
Back. Right. And him to just shut the fuck up and go. He said he's going to hire someone. Do it. Hire somebody to run the company and get the hell out of there. By the way, breaking news. Disgraced blood startup founder Elizabeth Holmes was sentenced to more than 11 years in prison for misleading investors. I frankly think she should have been sentenced to more than that, but okay, 11 years. Good start.
That's great to hear. Yep. It's always good to know when that happens. So.
All right. Hey, Spocko, we're getting to the end of the hour. I'm going to run. Thank you for all your input, for great information. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Right. Talk
Goodbye
to you later.
From San Francisco.
Bye. That is Spocko, everybody. I know it says in the chat room and when he posts on, it says Michael Spocko. I don't think his name is Michael. He's just Spocko. That's what you need to know about Spocko. He's just Spocko. Okay. Today, just for the last moment or so, she's pregnant? Holmes is pregnant with her second kid? How does she, she's in jail. How does she get pregnant? All right. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. So, it is that time of year again. You know that November is National Adoption Month. And every year around this time, I kind of share our story, which I'm not going to do today, but I may on Wednesday because that's our actual forever day. 22 years ago today, I left Los Angeles to get on a plane to fly to Frankfurt, Germany, and then from... and then change planes and fly to Almaty, Kazakhstan to bring my daughter home. So it was 22 years ago today I left. 22 years ago tomorrow I met her for the first time. And 22 years ago on the 23rd that I went to court and the judge, told me, yes, I could adopt Allison. And 22 years ago on the 24th, the day that I took her out of the orphanage. So this is, you know, this is a special time of year for me. I love Thanksgiving because actually our adoption day did fall on Thanksgiving that year. Oh, she's out on bail. So Elizabeth Holmes is out on bail and getting jiggy with it or something. I guess. I don't know. Then what does she do with the baby when you're in jail? How can someone give birth to a baby and then be in jail for the next 11 years? Her kid's going to be 10 when and if she gets out? I guess. I don't know. So much just doesn't make sense. I'll tell you what does make sense is the weekend is here. The weekend is here. So I'm going to let you go. Obviously, I did not play the show from 2 years ago today, but I will post it on the on my blog today with today's show. I'll post that show from 2 years ago and encourage you to listen to it because the things that Mike Lux said then all apply today. And in fact, the thing that I called him about to come on the show today was basically the same kind of pep talk because we need one. So we'll put that off until after Thanksgiving, but we'll get back to it because, again, I'm not leaving for a few months. So it's going to be business as usual around here for a while. All right. With that, we're done. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thanks to our new listeners who found us today. Appreciate you stopping by. I'm really bummed that you don't get to hear the interview with Ian Kershaw, but I promise you, your ears would have been bleeding Yeah, I wouldn't do that to you. All right. With that, we're done. Monday, Digby will be here for the whole hour. Digby on Monday, Laffy on Tuesday. Maybe a lovely adoption story on Wednesday, and then Thursday's Thanksgiving. And we're going to do a musical Thanksgiving show again. All right. So we got a lot to look forward to. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. See ya.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
There is no greater official honor for me than to stand on this floor and to speak for the people of San Francisco. This I will continue to do as a member of the House, speaking for the people of San Francisco, serving the great state of California, and defending our Constitution. And with great confidence in our caucus, I will not seek re-election to Democratic leadership in the next Congress.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi on Thursday announced that she would not seek to stay on as leader of the Democrats in the next Congress. And she spoke the words that it really was time to hear.
For me, the hours come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus that I so deeply respect.
Nancy Pelosi spent two decades leading the Democratic Party in the House. And at 82 years old, she said it's time to turn control over to the next generation. Good move. So about her two lieutenants, the 83-year-old Steny Hoyer said he also plans to step aside as the number two Democrat, though he will remain in the House representing Maryland. As for the third leadership member, Jim Clyburn, House Majority Whip, well, says he wants to stay in leadership, but he agreed to seek a new position. So there's that. So who's coming in? Well, as expected, Friday morning, Hakeem Jeffries announced his bid for a House Democratic leader in a generational shift that would make history. If elected by his fellow House Democrats, as is expected, the 52-year-old New Yorker would be the first black lawmaker to lead a party in Congress. Earlier Friday morning, Catherine Clark, Congresswoman from Massachusetts, announced her bid for Minority Whip, the number two position, while Congressman Pete Aguilar of California is expected to run for caucus chairman, that's the number three position. And speaking for myself alone, though it's nice to see a generational change in leadership, a more progressive-friendly leadership trio would have been much preferred. Just saying. So while it's now settled that the Republicans will control the House of Representatives and the Democrats will control the Senate, there are still a few races undecided. In Colorado, MAGOT candidate Lauren Boebert is headed to a recount after a surprise strong challenge from her Democratic opponent, Adam Frisch, who condemned Boebert as an angertainment celebrity. Ooh. With almost all of the votes counted, Boebert leads by 0.16 percentage points, or 551 votes out of nearly 327,000 counted. And on Thursday,
wait, I'm going to interrupt for a second.
Was delivering,
and for some reason, her challenger, her opponent, today conceded. I don't know why, but it's supposed to go to a recount because it's within the parameters that calls for a recount, and he conceded with 500 votes? I don't understand it. All right, sorry. Back to you. Was
delivering her speech announcing that she'd step down from her leadership, the Republicans showed an unsurprising lack of civility. The man poised to become Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, didn't even bother to show up, while other members of the House Republican Caucus press conference, alleging that they'd uncovered crimes committed by President Joe Biden's family, and announced that they plan on issuing subpoenas and drawing attention to the Bidens, focusing on the president's son, Hunter, even though there's no evidence suggesting that President Biden was involved in his son's business dealings. And it begs the question, have you checked out the Trump family? Moving on to Twitter, hundreds of Twitter employees resigned Thursday before a 5 p.m. deadline that the new owner, Elon Musk, had given for people to decide whether to leave or sign a pledge agreeing to work, quote, long hours at a new hardcore version of Twitter. More key engineers left than expected, which one employee said would cause the system to stop if it hits a problem. Elon Musk, who blew $44 billion to acquire Twitter, was joined by some of his advisors to meet with some so-called critical employees, hoping to get them to stay.
Musk had earlier laid off half of the company's staff and fired internal critics. And following the mass exodus on Thursday, the employees who chose to remain received an email telling them that Twitter's offices will be temporarily closed and badge access will be restricted through Monday. Is this thing still on? A federal judge on Thursday blocked a key portion of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's Stop Woke Act. You know, the bill intended to police speech and classroom content at state colleges and universities. U.S. District Judge Mark Walker called the measure, quote, positively dystopian. He said it violated the First Amendment rights of both students and faculty who, under this law, had been given standing to sue educational institutions for exposing them to potentially uncomfortable material, including the 1619 Project on American Racial History. When he introduced the bill in 2021, DeSantis said it would give, quote, businesses, employees, children, and families tools to fight back against woke indoctrination. The ruling from Judge Walker ran 138 pages, and it's being heralded as a major win for campus free speech by the groups who challenged the state. DeSantis, as you would expect, has said he will appeal. Well, thousands of unionized Starbucks workers at more than 100 locations across the country walked off the job Thursday to protest the company's refusal to engage in good faith negotiations with stores that have voted to organize. Workers United is the union representing thousands of Starbucks employees. They dubbed the nationwide day of action the Red Cup Rebellion because the walkout was to counter Starbucks' annual Red Cup Day. The strike came 2 days after the National Labor Relations Board asked a federal court to issue a nationwide cease and desist order to stop Starbucks from firing workers for engaging in union activity. The NLRB has accused Starbucks of more than 900 labor law violations over the past year. Bernie Sanders expressed solidarity with the thousands of employees who walked off the job on Thursday, posting on social media that CEO Howard Schultz is illegally union busting and firing workers for organizing. He tweeted, "I'm proud to stand with Starbucks workers on strike today across the country. Mr. Schultz, it is time to recognize the stores that unionized and negotiate with workers in good faith." And finally, the National Weather Service warning that a powerful lake effect snowstorm will likely paralyze Buffalo and other hard-hit communities this weekend. The storm, which already started dumping snow on parts of the area Thursday, could bury parts of western New York in up to 4 feet of snow. The warnings could remain in effect for several days. Some areas are expected to get 3 inches of snow per hour for long periods of time. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.